Hello and welcome to the Science Fiction Book Review Podcast. My name is Luke Burridge and this is the show where I review every single science fiction book that I read as I read it. There's no set schedule, it's just whenever I finish a book, I do the review, stick it up here on the podcast feed. Now, this review is a little bit different from most reviews that I do because it's not a science fiction book and it's not really a review as well. I've recently read most of a book, well, a big chunk of a book, called Total Recall by Gordon Bell. And I thought it would be like a popular science book, but it turned out to be more of a futurist book. It's nothing to do with science fiction as such, but I did have a lot of fun chatting with Jesse and Tamahomi on the previous episode, and after we pressed stop, we didn't press stop when we were recording after that one once my girlfriend turned up, but Jesse had things to say about Michio Kaku, a futurist, and I had things to say about Gordon Bell, who I thought was going to be a scientist, but also turned out to have written a futurist book. So you join us mid-conversation once Jesse is starting to get into the topic of Michio Kaku. Now, this is a very long, rambling thing because we weren't really recording it as a podcast, but it's a bit of it's a 0.5 special episode here that I hope you listeners enjoy. So once we get starting, we talk about lots of other subjects as well, but it keeps coming back to what futurism is and why we dislike the idea of futurism, but so much enjoy the idea of science fiction. So here it is. Thanks for listening, and I'll catch you next time.
Michio Kaku's got a podcast about futurism.
Really?
It's brand. Yep. It's called Science Fantastic with Michio Kaku. It's it's been going since 2009.
Jesse doesn't like him.
Luke knows that.
He's the Patrick Hester of futurism.
He is. Well, anyone who does futurism is a bullshit artist.
Oh, have I got stuff to say about that?
So look at if you can find him on iTunes, you look at the show names, right? Dr. Michio Kaku on nanotechnology and its applications in the future. So I started listening to that one, and he uses like the same words he made like 10 sentences, and he used the same words over and over and over again. And it's like, what level are you pitching these? Like, he's pitching it at such a low level that I think, it's like he's trying to inform people that the future will be different than the past.
Yep.
Or the present. Thank you, sir. So, myths of Area 51.
What are the 10 words that he used over and over and over again?
I can't even remember. It was like, you just have to listen to it.
Wow, there's a lot of episodes here.
I know. This is disturbing because when I typed in science fiction, looks like it's a radio show. Let's see. Science fiction.
Science Fantastic with Michio Kaku. Yeah. So let me just talk about this. Actually, I might spin this off as a different episode, and this can be the episode of Total Recall by Gordon Bell. Because this ties together a few things that we've been talking about here. So Total Recall, you know it as a movie, yeah? With Get Your Ass to Mars. You think I'm the real Quaid? No, you think this is the real Quaid? It is. And all those great things. This guy actually was on one of the Twitch shows, which I think is a really good one, called Triangulation. And Gordon Bell is this Microsoft researcher. He worked with Microsoft back in the day, when it was first setting up. He was like employee number 15 or something, And Triangulation is Tom Merritt, who is also on the Sword and Laser podcast, and Leo Laporte, and they talk to the smartest people in the world. I'm looking at the iTunes description here. It's a great show. If you want to hear interviews with, not so much famous technology people, but, famous within the technological world and computer world because they're,
Internet famous.
Well, not even internet famous, because most of these people I don't know, and I think I'm on the internet a lot, but they're the people who invented the internet. They're
right. Pioneers of different...
Yeah, pioneers areas of the thing, and it's good that they can get them on because it's a bit of oral history, when they talk about the stories. So this guy, Gordon Bell, decided that he would set up this thing, research project at Microsoft called My Life Bits. And My Life Bits was him recording all the bits of his life. So everything that he Everything that he read, he saved. Like, every website that he looked at, he saved the entire website. Not a link to the website, but actually the website. Every picture that he saw, he saved. Every book that he read, he either had scanned in, or if it was on, you know, if it was already as an ebook, he would save it there as well. And any
it's
notes
like
that he
made.
It's
like a life journal instead
life
of a journal,
yeah. He got scanned all of his financial documents, and because he worked at Microsoft, they had everything, you know, did the whole, what is it, text scanning as well.
OCR.
What's that?
OCR.
What's that?
Optical character recognition.
That's exactly what it is. Yes. So they did all of that kind of stuff as well to everything that he'd collected, and they threw out loads and loads of paper, and they scanned his, you know, everything from his schoolwork going back in the day, and they scanned everything going through. All of his photos went in. Everything went in. And then he wore a camera around his neck, and the camera took photos every time it recognized a new person by, you know, like, I think it was body heat. So every time a new person turned up, it would take a photo of them. He could make audio notes as well. Every time he wanted to take a photo, he could just press a button, it would capture surroundings. Every
Microsoft
time,
did this?
This was a research project at Microsoft, and it's not, you know, it's not commercially available.
Respect level going up for Microsoft.
Yeah, and doesn't this sound really, really interesting? And so he said, I've got a book out called Total Recall. Now, this is the kind of thing that really interests me, because I save everything. I don't delete any file from my computer, and I've just backed up my old PC hard drives onto a new hard drive, and so I've got every file that I've created back to, I think, 2000 and... Well, definitely 2003. I had a hard drive crash there, so I lost some stuff. But, I mean, I've got every email that I've received since, like, 1998 backed up and everything like that. And so it really interests me that I can have all this history and all this stuff that I've done. And I thought this would be a really interesting book to read by someone who's gone through this. And, like, he got to the point where he was taking everything that he ate. He'd take a photo of his plate before he started eating and after he started eating, so he'd keep track. So, you know, every time he goes to the
deck. Is he weighing his shit as well?
He's not weighing his shit, but he weighs himself. He, you know, he has this GPS thing and this pedometer, so he knows how much you do. And the idea being that he will record everything about his life, and then in the future, if he needs to know anything, he will be able to do, you know, get all of this stuff back. And he tells a few of these stories, like, oh, I went to the doctors and I had this heart surgery, and there was this scarring and this like some kind of rash on his chest, and the doctor looks at it and said, "Is your chest improving?" And he said, "Yep, my chest is improving." And the doctor went, great, but his chest hadn't been improving, but he needed to go to this wedding. And he knew it hadn't been improving because he had been taking a picture of his chest like twice a day for the last 2 weeks while he'd been in hospital. And he was like saying the information could be captured very easily with digital cameras. The information can be stored trivially because hard drives are massive now. He said you could, he said it worked out, you could on a, I think it was in 100 terabytes, which is in 10 years' time, that'll be like a standard hard drive size or something like that. He says you could capture everything that you hear, everything and everything that you read in your entire lifetime, plus 12 high-resolution photos per day of the 12 most important people that you met that day. And you can store that in 100 terabytes for someone's entire life. And the final piece, so you've got the capture, you've got the storage, and then the final thing is the sorting of the information, and that's what the research project was really about, was how to sort through this massive amounts of data. And he was just a test case for all of that. So this sounds fascinating, doesn't it? Don't bother reading the book, because I have just said everything that is fascinating about it. Everything that I've just said. Now you're thinking, oh yeah, and of course when you go to the doctor, oh, and it'd be really great for legal things. Oh, and everything that's going through your mind now about how good that would be. All he does is say, oh, and this is going to happen. Within 10 years' time, everyone's going to be doing this. Within 10 years' time, this will be normal. Within 10 years' time. So all he does is go through and list, as science fiction readers ourselves, we don't need a futurist to say, oh, this is what will be good, or this is what will happen. It's because, like, that is so basic. As soon as you tell someone who knows anything about science fiction, they'll just go, oh, yeah, that would be cool. And it'll be like the backdrop to one story.
Maybe that's why I hate futurism.
That's why when you said Michio Kaku, I was like, I have a bone to pick with this. Because I thought this book, I thought Total Recall by Gordon Bell would be him talking more about his story and talking about the technology and talking about this and talking, you know, actually him living that experience, because I thought it would be like science fiction. But now it's sort of like, I thought this will be great, because it's like getting a book written by someone who was using computers in the 1970s on a daily basis. It's like, it would have been great to have a book of someone who was using the internet on a daily basis in 1991 or, you know, when the World Wide Web came out or something like that, and was writing about their experiences, about how it was changing their life. But instead, it's like getting a book by, you know, someone who was on the internet in 91 and saying, hey, in the future...
So you're saying they documented the wrong guy.
No, it's just that, it wasn't even...
It's more of a futurism book than
it was pure futurism. It's like, oh, in the future, everyone will do this. And just imagine when we'll all be able to do this. And just imagine when we'll all be able to do this. And I'm like, don't tell me that. Tell me the details of what it was like living in that. And he does. But it's like every 20 pages, he tells a little story about his life or about somebody else who's done something similar. It's like this one guy says, oh, yeah, and I took a photo of every new person I met. This camera did it automatically. So I have a photo of the first time I met my wife. And that's awesome if you think about it. It's like, okay, yeah. Everybody that you meet, you get a photo of what they look like the first time you met them. I think that's fascinating. But it was just like, oh, and that's what happened. And now let's move on to the next one. And I think if you actually want good futurism, which isn't going to be proved wrong in 10 years' time, because in 10 years' time, I don't think this is going to be in place in 10 years' time, but who knows? I mean, the internet went in one direction and lots of people didn't see where the internet was going at all. But what we did see, what we can do with science fiction is the prediction of the future doesn't have to be true for it still to be a valid idea to talk about. But then you can talk about how that technology will influence someone as a technology or as a theme or as an idea or as a human being. You know, the human condition is what science fiction is about. And futurism is science fiction without the human condition part. Does that make sense?
Yeah,
it talks about the technology in isolation. And that part when he said, oh yeah, I have a photo of the first moment that I have a photo of my wife that exactly as she looked like when the first time I met her. And I think that's very, very interesting because I have similar things in that way.
But that's because it's a human personal story then,
so
right?
So how about a science fiction story written in this Gordon Bell Total Recall, not the movie Total Recall, but the Gordon Bell Total Recall book that he's written, which, to be honest, I got halfway through. I'm probably not going to finish reading it because it's just the same thing. I think I'll just read the first few pages of each chapter just to see what he's going to say in that chapter and then not actually have to read it because, you know, I've got a brain. I mean, this guy is obviously very, very clever at what he does. It's just the book is very disappointing. You might as well just, like, listen to the interview that they did on Triangulation with Gordon Bell because it was enough to... I don't often buy books, like popular science books, just based on, like, a one recommendation or one interview like that, but I do sometimes. And this book I got, and because it was... The subject itself is more fascinating than the book's exploration of it. So,
I guess you needed a different editor put a different slant on it.
Yeah, in a way. I think what I just want to do is have a conversation with him. Like, because a bit more about like what I do. I take photos all the time and I never get rid of any photos. And yesterday, me and Juliana were going to a wedding and we were talking about how the wedding, it was like miles and miles away from Berlin. It took us like an hour and a quarter to drive there. And it was in the middle of nowhere. And we were saying about, weddings that, because I once... said to my sister, she said, I'm getting married this year. And I said, well, if it clashes with the European Juggling Convention, you know, I might not be able to go. And she goes, well, it does clash on those dates. And I'm like, So then it's like, how, you know, how do you want to say, like, that you don't want to go to your sister's wedding because you want to go to the European Juggling Convention instead? It's a tricky situation. And I said to the guys in the back, Daniel and Doreen, I said, well, you know, how many times do you get married? You know, I guess most people don't get... And then I realized that those guys had been married and now they're split up. So the two people in the back of the car have been married and they'll probably they might get married again themselves. But it was quite funny to say that. And they sort of said a bit about their story of the way that they got married. And it was actually, they were sitting next to each other. Both of them were on Skype. And then Daniel sort of proposed to Doreen on Skype. Like saying, hey, we should get married. That's the easiest way for me as an American to stay in Berlin and not have to be going home. So I'm not saying it's bad, but it was a marriage of convenience in a way. It was a successful wedding. It was a successful marriage if you look at it in the long run, I guess, even though they're now split up a few years later. Anyway, that's not the point. But then Daniel said, hey, I wonder if that Skype, if I still have that in my Skype history. And I was like, yeah, Skype normally saves stuff going back a long time. I think, let me just bring up Skype now.
The
Skype chat. So,
yeah, it does.
So if I go here, if I scroll to the top, I can click messages with Jesse And I can type in all. Oh, it's going to take ages with Jesse because I chat online with Jesse all the time. But it's not going to capture all the audio stuff, even though we do often record conversations on Skype. Yeah, even our conversations, text conversations, are going to take ages to load. But hello? Are you still
yeah,
there,
I'm
guys?
Yeah, I'm here. Yeah, I'm here.
Okay, just because there's so much loading here, the call recorder is suddenly...
So he proposed over text, not over audio?
Yeah, they were just sitting next to each other. If he wanted to record propose an audio, he could have turned to her. They were in the same room. Guys... I think I got to...
Not very romantic.
No, let me just... Call recorder is stopped. Let me see. Oh, fuck. I shouldn't have tried loading all of the messages that I sent to Jesse.
Mine's still going.
Uh-oh. Crash.
Yours is still going. Yeah. Okay, well, let's see. Let's see if this is good. Anyway, what was I trying to say? I really hope this isn't crash now. Come on, Skype. You can do it. Yeah, so I said...
Actually, I never delete any email. I have all of them.
Exactly. That's what I'm saying. And I saved loads and loads and loads and loads of chats that I had back in, say, 2000 on Yahoo Messenger. And I still have loads and loads of that stuff. I don't delete anything that I write. There's loads of emails that I write and don't send. There's lots of articles that I've written and loads of stuff that I save as text files. Not... And I don't sort it in any way. And I don't delete any photos, and I've got, like, hours and hours and hours of videos.
Presumably there will be an AI
exactly, and
they
say, well,
now,
and that's what Doreen said. She said,
out what you want.
Yeah, she said, well, how do you sort through all that stuff? I said, I don't. I'm just saving it to the time when something like My Life Bits will come out and index it all. And it used to be that the internet wouldn't be able to record very... the internet was so small that you'd have to have a book telling you where to go. Call recorder has come back. Yes, I now have... every message that I've sent to Jesse. The first thing he ever said was, that was fast to me, in 2009.
You better be careful you say to Luke. He can use it against you 10 years later.
I am always careful what I say to everyone.
Yeah.
It's good.
Anyway, so...
I try to be anyway.
With the internet, it used to be that you wanted to find more on the internet, and it was all about more information. And when you type something into a search engine, it's like, hey, this is a common misspelling. We've included these misspelt results in your query result. You know, these misspelled entries in your query result as well, just to give you more information that might be interesting to you on the entire internet. And now Google is like, you've messed up, you spelt it wrong. We're going to ignore your original request and give you what you really want, you know. So now it's getting rid of all the shit and giving you the one little page that you really, really want, and that's what Google can do really well. And in 10 years' time, to be a futurist, there'll be search on... there'll be these algorithm things that can search through everything that you've done, put it into a database, because that's what this My Life Bits project did with Microsoft, this research project from Microsoft, which isn't available except to academic institutions. And that's what will become available in the future. And I'll have all of my digital meanderings and stuff going back, you know, back to 2003 for sure, but all the way back to about 1998 when I first started doing stuff on the internet and first started doing email things and when I got my first Yahoo account. There's quite a bit of... there's quite a few of my college and university emails which have disappeared now. I didn't keep track of all of them back then, but everything else is saved. And, yeah, and, like... that's why I was so interested in this book, because I think it will reflect my life, and I've lived my life very, very publicly and openly on the internet for many years. And lots of people say, oh, you put more stuff about you online than you'll ever know, but all of the stuff that I share online, I just get benefits back from this all the time, and that's why I do the Science Fiction Book Review podcast. I mean, how many people have an hour-long discussion of every book that they've read in the past 3 years? I mean, except, you know, me and a few other people.
If they made it public, no one.
Well, that's the
no
thing.
One else.
But I mean, how many people would have that privately? So I think creating art and creating content to share with the world actually makes it, it gives me so much benefit. I get so many great book recommendations, and now I've not read a bad book in months, because I've just gone, oh, I'll just take the good books that I want to read and take the interesting stuff that I want to read rather than the shit that's out there. I've got filters for me now in terms of listeners who recommend stuff to me and say, hey, you should really read this, or hey, you should really read that, and I do, and it's awesome.
So the only time that you've gone wrong with that is when you went with your instinct after listening to that triangulation podcast.
What? Yeah.
Well, you picked up a bad book.
Yeah, but now I'm talking about it, so it's okay.
So you're extracting some value from
it. I'm extracting entertainment value for myself by having a conversation with you, and hopefully extracting entertainment value about that book. I mean, if you
now
really...
Now, that is my theory as to why the people who put out those episodes about bad movies do it, is they say, this is terrible!
And they think they're being entertaining.
Well,
they are trying to get back something from it.
They're trying to get something back from it, and they are. They're getting you know, that podcast. But for us, we say, why would you ever talk about something crappy? Well, if I guess you're bad at picking stuff, you're going to talk about something crappy a lot.
Yeah, but like Hominids was a Hugo Award winning novel. You know, how bad could it be? That
picking
bad
Hugo Award winners. It turns out to be a really big mistake. I picked Star Tide Rising because it's a Hugo Award winner.
That's not a bad book.
It's a terrible book. Terrible.
Go
back and read my review, or go back and read the book again, and you'll see it is just terrible.
That's an Uplift War book, isn't it, David Byrne?
Yeah, it is.
It's not that bad. I mean,
you're remembering it fondly. But
is that the one with the dolphins in the sea?
Scott recommended it to me. Yes.
Is it the dolphin one? It's not that. I mean, it's not the best. I'd say it's probably the worst of the Uplift War novels, but it's not that bad.
It is terribly written. Terrible.
Okay, maybe it's rose-tinted glasses.
I can bully you into believing it.
I think I read your review on SFF Audio, because let me check it out.
By the way, Connie Willis just won the Hugo this year.
No shit.
Yeah, for that two big book series.
David Brin has heard some very interesting ideas through the novel. Some of the ideas presented are new spins on old themes. Others are quite original and interesting, at least to my ears. Overall premise of Uplift is interesting and would definitely be worth reading about, except for one minor issue. This is a horrible novel.
Okay,
it is very, very talky.
Well, we can read that. I did actually read that book, that review of that book, because it was recently that you... Oh, no, it must have come up in conversation.
And, you know, whenever people say, you know, Nebulas are good or Hugos are good.
Yeah, well, I just said before that I think I joked about it on an SFO audio. I think it was definitely with you, Jesse, that were there as well. And I said, oh, yeah, Connie Willis will get another Hugo because she does. That's what she does. That's what people vote for, Connie Willis.
She's good at getting Hugos.
Exactly. And I tried listening to Doomsday Book as an audio book and found it unlistenable to.
She's really,
I didn't like the future stuff. I like the past stuff. I finished it.
She needs an editor.
Yeah. Actually, they brought it up on the Eiffelheim review that I just listened to, where the good book is a, the good story is a hard to find podcast. Anyway, anything else about Michio Kaku and futurism? Because I just wanted to get that rant of Google, Gordon Bell's. Talk a bit about my experience with the same kind of thing, and I was just expecting more from it rather than crass futurism. Futurism is science fiction without the human condition. I think that's the quote that I'll have to use in the future.
But whenever you put a date on something, this is going to happen
within 10 years.
They say by 2018 we'll all be living inside cyberspace. Like, where the fuck did you pull that number from? Out of your ass. That's where you pulled that number from. And you are expecting us not to call you on it because it's 5 years from now.
That's what Gordon Bell could have done. He said, when he said, look, in 100 terabytes we could do this. Moore's Law is going in this direction. We've already have Google doing this kind of stuff. 10 years ago, we didn't, like, if you search for something on your desktop 10 years ago, it was painful. It would go through everything and do that, and you could only search for the titles. And now, on my Mac, I've got Spotlight. Okay, Command Space, I can type in Sunshine, and it immediately lists, like, loads and loads of files with it. It's got Fu Manchu in there, MSS list, which is a movies you should see podcast that I listened to years and years ago, and I made a list of I got their list and looked at that. So that's something from like maybe 4 years ago, 5 years ago, when I listened to that podcast and they talked about Sunshine. It was one of their first things as well, like that goes on.
That's a piece of shit movie, by the way.
Sunshine. Oh, yep. I quite liked it.
Big piece of steaming shit.
Not a science fiction. And look at this.
It's not science fiction.
I know it's not. That's why I said it's not science fiction. Look at this. Final Circle of Paradise, the ebook there. That's obviously got the word sunshine in it. And I can just now just go down and I get a instant preview of everything like that. So he's saying, oh, in the future, we'll just collate this together. Moore's Law, in terms of storage and speed of recall and capture and stuff like that. He could actually give all of the solid numbers to say, this is where we were 10 years ago. This is where we are now. In 10 years' time, my best guess, looking at this graph, that's what we could do. But he doesn't do that. He sort of like skirts around those issues and just goes, in 10 years' time, we'll all be doing this. In 10 years' time, we'll all be doing that. No, in 10 years' time, it'll be possible to do that and the tools for that might exist. But there's still many people in the world who don't know how to use computers or don't know how to use the internet and don't want to do all that kind of stuff.
It'll go to the rich people.
Just like William Gibson says, right? The future is here. It's just not evenly distributed.
Yep.
I think the problem with all this futurist bunk is that no matter what you say about whether they're accurate or not, their stuff is not falsifiable. So what they can say is in 2018 when they said this was going to happen, they said, well, technically it's already here because, well, dude, it was back when you predicted it that it was already there, right? So what they're really saying is, look at this interesting fact about the present. And then they start saying that this is going to be in the future,
and
too.
And that's what I wanted Total Recall to be, by God and Mel. I wanted it to be, hey, check out all this stuff in the present. Oh, and this is where I think it's going in the future. Rather than, in 10 years' time, we'll all be doing this. And in 20 years' time, it'll be normal to do this. Grumble, grumble, grumble. Right, anything else to say about futurism? Total Recall. Get your ass to
that,
Mars.
That guy, Michikaku, was on SF Signal. I made this comment. What an idiot. He says these things will happen in 2080. We know the singularity is 2030. And then somebody removed my comment and said, remove for attacking the guest.
Wait a second. That's hilarious.
Yep.
Yeah, my joke failed to go through, I guess.
I think somebody... presumably if it got posted, it wasn't auto-removed because of the word idiot. But... yeah, I mean, the thing is you shouldn't have him on your show. I saw him on Real Time. Michio Kaku was on Real Time with Bill Maher. And Bill Maher was trying to get him to talk about the Fukushima reactor. Not because he was from Japanese ancestry, but because he's a physicist.
Yeah.
And the guy knows less about, based on what he said on the show, he knows less about nuclear physics than I do. And his information was like, useless. Didn't provide any analysis. Bill Maher was trying to extract stuff from him, and he just couldn't. You know, it was like, well, yeah, I certainly think that could be the... Dude.
Yeah. I agree they should bury Japan, though.
Yeah.
They should just bury that whole nuclear site.
Bury it? What about the next What about the next earthquake and tidal wave and tsunami?
They said they did that in Russia with the... Was it Chernobyl?
Chernobyl.
Stuck it
in
a box.
And it worked fine there.
Okay.
I think, Luke, you sent me a picture at one point of an island in the South Pacific. Maybe it was Bikini or maybe it wasn't.
Yeah.
If you go on Google Maps, you can see what looks like a flying saucer or a giant sphere or something on the ground. And it's one of the nuclear blast sites for the hydrogen bomb. And what they did is the soil was just totally radioactive. So they took all the topsoil from the island and put it in a big pile and then mixed in cement so that it couldn't
go
leach
anywhere.
Out. Couldn't leach out. And so, I mean, there are ways of dealing with nuclear reactor stuff, but it's just, I don't know. Who's the other guy, the other science popularizer? I actually think he's a lot better. Neil deGrasse Tyson, right?
Yeah,
he's got a new show.
But he's like an astronomer and head of the Hayden Planetarium at the Natural History Museum in New York as well.
Yeah.
I think he's actually doing...
He's a real scientist, right? Yeah. In the same sense that Michio Kaku is, except I think that, when he talks, I get a little bit more of a sense of facts. And I don't know. He doesn't talk about the future. He talks about what they're doing, what the present is. And I know my thoughts about string theory, so I won't get into that. But
I think he's an expert in string theory.
I don't like Michio Kaku.
Okay. Right then, let's leave it there. Right, I think there. I'm gonna put this out as a little mini episode, just about, so I don't have to talk about Gordon Bell in a normal episode. I'll just and his project. Yeah, listen to the triangulation episode from the Twit Network.
Probably tack it on to the end, you know.
Nah, it's too long for that. I'll just include this as a different one. I'll just do a minute introduction to say this is a continuation from the last episode. What's up?
Yeah, Luke doesn't like it when a podcast is more than an hour.
Yeah, I just don't start listening to it.
Scott, he thinks we should be under an hour.
Yeah, definitely. Any time that the SF audio is more than an hour, it just sits there and it takes me ages to get around to listen to it. Anytime it's under an hour, I just listen to it straight away, as in that day. So just keep that in mind. Right, this is it. Thanks a lot, guys. I've got my girlfriend's here, so I'm gonna go and
we can't listen.
Hang out with it. Well. If we want to, we're probably just going to
have a whole separate podcast.
We'll have a boring, okay. Hey, what have you done today? Oh, I've sat around talking to nerds on the internet about nerdy internet shit. And then she'll be going, oh, I've been singing, and that's about it.
You called me that a couple times. I don't know if I agree.
What, you're a nerdy internet guy who talks about internet shit?
Yeah, you're a geek founder.
I don't think I subscribe to either of those words, geek or nerd.
Okay. Jesse, to be honest, I think you are probably one,
keep saying I'm the nerdiest guy you know.
No,
whatever.
Not nerdy. Geek, definitely geek.
You have a pocket protector?
I would like to have one because I put a lot of shit in my pocket, but
I don't. No, the thing is, I don't even know what that word was that you just said. Do you have a what?
Pocket protector.
What's a pocket protector?
It's you can put a whole bunch of pens in it and then stick it in your shirt pocket and it won't rip your
shirt. It's like a piece of plastic that is, it's like a condom for your pocket to prevent your pocket from getting poked holes in it.
In a way,
and stuff.
In a way, I'm thinking that is the geekiest thing I ever heard, and I'm so glad that I don't know what it is. And the other part of me is going, oh, that would be really handy because I've just put a hole in my pocket the other day, putting a pair of scissors in there when I was making something. No, not a pair of scissors, a pair of pliers. In a way, I'm thinking, oh, that'd be really cool. And in the other way, I'm thinking, I'm such a nerd.
If you run around with
your Revenge of the Nerds, and it's all over it.
Well, I did just admit that I have everything, every email that I've ever sent going back sort of 13 years and every file that I created. So I think
that's cool.
Geeky stakes, nerdy stakes, I've got a lot there. And I do a podcast where I talk about science fiction all the time. So I think
the objection is, there's a podcast called Functional Nerds. I think that
I won't listen to that podcast on principle because I don't want to be associated with functional nerds.
Exactly. And Patrick Hester, who runs it. So he's not functional, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah,
he's dysfunctional.
It was on the list of podcasts on the SFF Signal. No, the SF Signal. SFF Signal, that's a different podcast. I can't see
what it is. Hey, good idea. Good title.
SFF Signal.
SF Signal.
Yes, I know. I got it mixed up, yeah.
Okay, so he's got a podcast
when we merge, that's what it'll be.
Then there's Geek Nights, right?
Geek Nights I can do.
I'm not into the culture of nerding or geeking. I'm only into a certain, a whole lot of subjects. Yeah. No, a whole lot of subjects.
But you want them individual.
I'm an idea person. I'm not I don't have nerdgasms or whatever it is those people.
I don't think you're a computer geek.
I like playing computers, but that's just because they're really useful.
Mm-hmm. I like the idea of being an idea geek. An idea geek can work out.
Yeah, I mean, somebody said he's a history geek. What that means is just an enthusiast.
Yeah. Well, I think I always like to think that a geek
enthusiasm, wonderful.
You can be a professional at something and you're a professional, yeah. And then you can be a geek at something and you could know as much about your topic as the professional does about their topic. And it could be the same topic, or if not more so, but you know that it's not your job. And you do something else for your job. So it means a lot to you as an enthusiasm thing, but it doesn't mean everything to you like you're basing a living on. The thing is, a nerd isn't a professional at what they do, also knows probably as much as the geek and the professional do, but they think they know better than the professional. They think they know better than the geek. And I think that's the thing, that they think, oh, all the professionals in the world know all of this, and I'm a nerd, but my opinion is more valid than the professionals. For example, Star Trek nerds. If you like Star Trek, great. You know everything about it, great. You'll probably know more about Star Trek than the people who wrote the Star Trek episodes or the Star Trek books or anything like that. But it's just, you just know it, and it's no problem. It's just an enthusiasm. But a nerd will complain when the professionals get something wrong. That is that's the thing, when they think they know better than the professionals at their job. And even if they do know better, it doesn't matter to the geeks.
Well, if we're talking about continuity, I would agree that that's something I don't like. What? Okay, when I complain about the new Star Trek movie as being a piece of shit, it's not because I think, you know, they misunderstood Scotty's origin. He's not from Glasgow. He's from Edinburgh. It's because they've put something in called red matter, which is nothing. Yeah. Yes. And they have story stuff that is nothing. And
no, I understand. The first 10 minutes of that movie made me cry. When Kirk's father is like takes over the control of the whatever the ship was, and he does the suicide mission, and he gets everyone out, and his son's being born at the same time. I was like, and then the rest of the movie, I was just like, yeah, okay. But like I say,
didn't IO9 do a? I think it was IO9. I want to read that article about the top 10 suicide missions in science fiction or something like
probably,
that.
That's probably the kind of thing they'd do, yeah.
Yeah, because, the thing is in literature and in film and stuff, I mean, the ramming speed, we're going to kill this submarine and blow up that ship or whatever. I mean, it's been popular since at least World War II.
Yeah, well, the thing is, in World War II, if you rammed a submarine, the submarine would sink and the ship would probably be all right.
Yeah, that's true.
And that's so. If any time a submarine came anywhere near a ship, they're like ram, ram, ram. You know, and it was always the better bet to ram the submarine, because even if everyone on board the submarine died and the ship sank, the ship has more lifeboats. So it was always the better thing to ram the submarine. Anyway, carry on.
Okay.
No, that I was just saying. I think that
except
there's something interesting.
Well, the reason
iceberg.
The reason why the ships in the Second World War would ram the ships, ram the submarines, is because the Titanic happened, and they sort of worked out a lot about ramming stuff by accident by the Titanic.
They said, let's see, it's 1912. They said in 38 years, everyone will be living on ships that are ramming other ships.
Yeah, and everything.
You know, futurism.
Nice. Yeah, the futurism of the Titanic. We don't need no lifeboats. This ship is unsinkable.
That's the only time futurism makes sense to me is when you've got a
like
character
health and safety. Oh no, what
a character in a story?
Yeah,
who doing futurism is like 1918, and he says, "I can't believe the way this conference is going." Or 1919, I can't believe the way this conference is going. If they don't stop things, we'll have another world war on our hands. In
1914.
No, 1919 is the peace conference.
Okay, the Treaty of Versailles,
So they're saying, you know, Hitler's going to rise to power, blah, blah, blah. That's fine. In a story, that works. If there's a historical figure who said that, I'd be very, very surprised.
Well, no, futurism can work. No science fiction saw the internet coming. Very, very few the internet coming. People talk about, you know, cyberspace and the
it's
stuff.
Not the internet.
It's not the internet. It's nothing like the internet. People talk about, in Snow Crash as well, the Second Life kind of thing. And that's not the internet. The internet is really, like, the blogosphere is very powerful at the moment. And the person who saw that is Orson Scott Card in Ender's Game. Like Ender's
He saw not the blogosphere, he saw discussion boards.
Yeah, discussion boards, but it's very much the blogosphere because everyone could publish their own thing on an equal footing if they wanted it, and then people would comment back on that and stuff. So it's more than discussion boards. It's sort of like a mix between discussion boards and the blogosphere and people commenting on the blogosphere and then doing their own blog posts about it, and the way that political thought could be shaped through the equal exchange of ideas by people. And I think Huffington Post being bought by AOL for all that money and then Huffington Post buying up other blogs, and it's big business now, and it is opinion forming, and I think that kind of feeds back into the, like, especially in America, like the national discourse, less so probably elsewhere. But I think his foresight there with the characters of Peter and Valerie doing that and taking sort of starting to take control of political things. You know, Obama got elected.
So you're saying that is actually probably one of the more important parts of that book.
I say it's more one of the better. I think it's from what science fiction I've read, which was written before, say, 1990, when the internet was starting to get known, and then especially 1994 when the World Wide Web started coming out and it became part of popular culture in the late 90s, when it was already part of the popular culture. I think Ender's Game is one of the best examples of futurism within science fiction about the internet. I don't think there's anything else quite like it.
But the difference is he didn't say, by the year 18.
No, he didn't need to, because it was science fiction, and it was talking about the politics. It was talking about society, and the technology section was just a different part of it. Yeah, again, going back to the human condition, that's what that book is about, and no futurist book is. And if it is, it's suddenly science fiction, and that's what we all like here, yeah? That's what
we all like. Sure.
Anyway, we brought that round in another big circle back to that. Right, I really have to go now, guys, so thanks a lot.
We're cramping your style.
Yeah, I've got to go.